The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and I'm coming to you from Edstone, England, not live and not in our studio today. We are not quite set up right now. We've got our old studio taken down, all the acoustic panelings off the wall, etc., and our new studio is still a bit of a construction site. It's coming along. It's coming along nicely. It certainly seems very promising, but not quite ready yet. And we're not really set up for live broadcasting. So here I am. If I sound a bit different from normal, I'm actually sitting at the desk in our Trumpet Daily video studio. It actually sounds pretty echoey in here. It doesn't seem to sound that way on the recording, at least when I watch the video. So Hopefully it sounds okay for all of you listening live on air. Now, there's quite a lot of interesting bits of news I want to get to today. I'll start with, well, I guess a piece of news that's not really more sad than interesting, but I'll start with a bit of an update on that terrorist attack in London. As I'm sure you heard, a man drove his car into a bunch of cyclists outside the Houses of Parliament yesterday morning, and it's one that certainly looks like a terrorist attack. The man behind it, Salih Carter, he's been arrested on suspicion of preparing an act of terror. And once again, he comes from not too far away from us here in Edstone. He was in Birmingham, not too far from Solihull for some of you locals. And it's already clear now that this was not just a standard traffic accident. He was believed to have traveled down to London through the night and then kind of been waiting for more than an hour and a half, watching, planning what he was doing, before then he drove across to the other side of the road and drove right into a bunch of cyclists waiting at the traffic lights in central London there, before then ramming into one of the barriers outside the House of Lords. As any of you know, if any of you have visited London, especially in the middle of the town there, where normal petrol cars have to pay quite a hefty fee to get into that area, you get a lot of cyclists, and he put a few in hospital, but I think it's amazing that more didn't get hurt with that attack. And once again, it just shows how hard these attacks are to stop. I mean, this individual wasn't known to authorities. He wasn't on anybody's radar, really. He came to the UK from Sudan about 5 years ago. He seems to have become radicalized in recent years, and he just takes a car and drives into people. It is just shocking and in some ways even scary just how easy these attacks are to commit. And on the subject of radicalized immigrants, Sweden is having some big trouble up there. Some dramatic news from Sweden on a similar subject in the run-up to their election. This is from Deutsche Welle. Wave of arson attacks hit cars in Gothenburg, other Swedish cities. The Swedish police, they called these attacks organized and prepared. The article states, groups of youths in Sweden set fire to dozens of cars in the city of Gothenburg and surrounding towns on Monday in what Prime Minister Stefan Löfven describes as extremely organized attacks. Police said up to 100 cars were burned or damaged in Gothenburg, Sweden's second biggest city, as well as Trollhättan, an industrial area with high unemployment, and Falkenberg. A number of cars were also burned overnight in Stockholm. Police did not say what might have motivated the organized and prepared attacks, only to confirm that gangs of youth were involved without specifying numbers. Witnesses told police that the alleged offenders were dressed in dark clothing and hoodies. The Prime Minister, he said, it seemed very organized, almost like a military operation. But the article notes, but he did not say who might have been behind the attack. He said, society is always going to react strongly to this kind of thing. So, you know, other articles talked about how there's all these just violent gangs of youths throwing Molotov cocktails. just going on the rampage, organized, and a lot of it revolving around burning cars, spreading terror. Now, this article they don't really tell you much about who's behind that. This particular article kind of gives away who was behind these attacks in one sentence. It says that these attacks, quote, come amid growing concerns over violence, which could benefit Sweden's anti-immigration Sweden Democrats in the upcoming election. Now, why might these attacks benefit the anti-immigrant party? Well, could it be that it's mostly people with a migrant background behind the violence? Now, that's what they're implying, but nobody will, you very, very rarely find a mainstream news source that will come out and say it. I remember the same thing. I've covered some of these mass arson attacks in France, where just about every New Year's, it's this tradition almost, where people go and they rampage and they set fire to all of these cars. And all the media know it's people, it's migrants, it's usually Muslim migrants. They're from the suburbs where all of these Muslim migrants congregate. You just look at the names of the people that are arrested. But nobody or very few will come out and actually say it. They just hint about it. Anyway, the migrants, they're having a big impact in Scandinavia. It is a big story. Denmark is actually building a wall on its southern border with Germany. Now, it's more to keep out migrant animals than migrant peoples. I think they're trying to stop rabies and things like that. But I still find the story pretty amusing that they're building a wall with Germany. Mr. McDonald will actually be talking about this subject much more on Friday on Scandinavia. And I was chatting to him this morning. He has some really interesting material on some of these migrant attacks, but also just the real agenda behind Sweden, the Swedish model. You hear left-wing politicians talk about that all the time. The Swedish model socialism. He's got some really fascinating information about that he's getting ready to share with you. I think it's going to be a great show. So make sure you tune in for that on Friday or listen to the podcast. While I'm mentioning podcasts, I'll just mention quickly this popped out a smaller news story, but AFP had an article yesterday. Apparently 124 million Americans listen to podcasts. 73 million listen on a monthly basis, which that's a huge figure. I mean, think about America's population being, just purely from memory, is it something about 325 million people? And 70 million of them listen to podcasts. So listen to podcasts at least monthly, even more listen occasionally. If you're one of those 73 million, then we've got plenty of material for you on KPCG. And if you're not one of the 73 million and want to get in on this new trend, well, we've got plenty of material for you to begin doing that. You can sign up for, or you can see all of our material at thetrumpet.com. Just click on the radio tab, and we've got a growing number of really interesting radio shows. A lot on news, a lot on the Bible, but even just on English literature, on music, and a whole and growing range of other subjects. Well, we'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll get into some very important and very relevant bigger stories. You're listening to Trumpet Daily Radio on KPCG.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. We've been talking about just some news from today, and another really interesting story from just the last few days, Russian President Vladimir Putin will be visiting Germany on Saturday. I think this was announced just yesterday. This is from Deutsche Welle. They wrote, Angela Merkel and Vladimir Putin clearly have a lot to talk about. For the second time in 3 months, the German Chancellor and the Russian President will be getting together for a bilateral meeting. This time, after Merkel visited the Black Sea resort of Sochi in May, Putin will be coming to the German government's retreat in Messeburg, a picturesque castle outside Berlin. Why exactly, they write, the two leaders should choose to meet again this weekend is unclear. Though it could have something to do with the fact that Merkel's government, having just survived a domestic political crisis before the summer break, now has its mind clear for foreign policy, an area that plays to the Chancellor's long experience. They continue, at first glance, there would seem to be endless topics for the two long-serving leaders to discuss. Russian interference in US elections, the alleged poisoning of former Russian spies in the UK, for instance. But on Monday, Merkel spokesman Stefan Siebert named three key topics the pair would concentrate on: Syria, Ukraine, and the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. So you've got a lot of talk between Russia and Germany right now. I'll remind you also, I talked about this perhaps when I was on the show a few weeks ago, that on July 24th, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, she met with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and the Chief of Russia's General Staff, General Valery Gerasimov. And Merkel and Putin, they talked on the phone to set that meeting up. And a lot in the press noted how unusual it is for Merkel to be meeting with another country's Chief of the General Staff, you know, the head of another country's military. Not a political leader, but meeting with a military leader. And Gerasimov was actually banned from visiting the EU because he's under sanctions, and Germany had to give him a waiver for that meeting to take place. There were very few details about it. Germany's Free Democratic Party said it was regrettable and odd and complained about a suspicious silence about the meeting. So you've got just a lot of, like this mentioned, or the article mentioned with Merkel and Putin, this is the second time they're meeting in 3 months. A lot of meetings going on between Germany and Russia right now. Another astute news story from Deutsche Welle a couple of days ago related to this. Russia to settle more bills in euros instead of dollars. New sanctions from America, they were going to decrease their involvement in the U.S. economy. Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, he warned that any U.S. move to curb activities of Russian banks would be seen as a, quote, declaration of economic war. And this is also from Deutsche Welle. The finance minister said that Russia would settle more bills in rubles and other currencies such as the euro. So you see all of these countries shifting away from the dollar, moving closer to Europe. Now, how's that for an example of the mainstream media getting things completely the wrong way around? You know, they're talking so much about Trump-Russia collusion. You go and tune on the news and it's just everywhere. Whereas you look at what's happening in real life and the US is getting tougher on Russia, introducing more sanctions. And in response, Russia is saying, okay, we're going to work closer with Europe. We're going to use euros more. Completely back to front, what we're seeing in the news media. And this is a really important trend to watch. Obviously, it's something that Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury has spoken really powerfully about. It's the subject of the cover article of the new Trumpet print edition. We've pushed that hard on this show, but if you've not read that, you really do need to go and read that. There's just so much great information about why all of these meetings are taking place right now between Germany and Russia. He spoke about it on a Key of David program. Just to kind of give you a touch of this subject, here's a couple of clips from that Trumpet Daily Radio, or that Key of David show.
But here now we see Germany going to Russia and building this tight little relationship with a country who is, well, committing a lot of terrorism himself in Syria and poisoning former agents of Russia, destroying them and poisoning them with something like a small little nuclear power. That's what it amounts to. I mean, this is brutal. Can we really build a relationship with somebody who thinks like that and who murders people, and he's murdered at least 130 journalists, they tell us? Can we really build a close relationship with someone like that? Well, you know it's not going to end well. But think about this. They're going to get 70% of their gas from that pipeline coming directly from Russia right on down where it will serve just Germany itself. That's the plan. So here we have Vladimir Putin thinking about, well, he's resurrecting this old Soviet empire, and you have another group of people, Germany and their allies, well, they want to build the Holy Roman Empire, the seventh head of that most destructive empire throughout history. So let's take a look at Germany and Russia's secret war against America. We need to understand this. I'm going to have to read to you a little here so that we'll understand somewhat about this pipeline.
So this is an important story to watch. These two really do seem like they're accelerating the way that they're working together. And this is something that we've long been talking about watching. In 1962, the Plain Truth magazine wrote, "Once a German-dominated Europe is fully established, Germany will be ready to negotiate and bargain with Russia and behind the backs of Western allies if necessary." In that same Trumpet print edition as Mr. Gerald Flurry's article, I have one on going through the history of how Germany dominates the European Union, why Germany dominates the European Union. But it's happened exactly the way the Plain Truth said. Once German-dominated Europe is fully established and Germany really does dominate Europe, then they'd be bargaining with Russia. And we see a lot of talk right now between Germany and Russia. That same article wrote, "When a Russo-German deal is made, you can be sure the doom of the United States and Great Britain is on the horizon." And that's what we see with all of this talk now. It's really got an anti-American flavor, and Mr. Flurry goes through that in that article. So read that article about Germany and Russia's secret war against America to understand just what this really important collusion that's going on between Germany and Russia. The way the two of them are working right now against America's interests in Europe and where all this is leading. Well, there's one more big story I wanted to focus on for most of the rest of the show. This is from China. It's one I touched on, but it's a really, in the last show I gave, but it's a really interesting, a really disturbing story. And it's something that paints a vivid picture of the after America world. I mean, we talk a lot in this show about the decline of America. We talk about America being replaced in all of these regions and the rise of these other powers like China. Why does that matter? It can kind of seem academic, it can kind of seem remote, but with this story, we get a glimpse of what that after America world looks like. A UN commission just a few days ago, they reported that China has 1 million Uyghur Muslims in re-education centers. And I think we all know from Soviet history what that is a euphemism for. 1 million people locked basically in concentration camps. Here's France 24 talking about the story.
The Uyghur minority is predominantly based in the autonomous Xinjiang province, a vast region of northwest China. Little information gets out of the remote area, where multiple ethnic populations live, including the predominantly Sunni Muslim Uyghurs. But the UN has received growing evidence, backed by satellite footage, of what one commissioner called massive internment camps. In addition to the 1 million detained, another 2 million are thought to be in coercive re-education programs to push them to abandon their Muslim faith and heritage. Specialists on the area say there could be up to 1,200 camps, and the criteria for detention remains opaque. But reports of the camps, as well as kidnappings, mass DNA collection, and an atmosphere of martial law in the streets, are all part of a crackdown in recent years against what Beijing says is growing terrorism and religious extremism in Xinjiang, while critics say it's widespread religious persecution.
So these concentration camps with these million Uyghur Muslims in, they're so big you can see them from space. 1,200 camps they're talking about. Just a massive project. And it's not really new news. I think this UN report really does reveal the scale of it. But in April, the US Congressional Executive Committee on China, they wrote a letter to the US ambassador to China drawing attention to this. Senator Mark Rubio, he called the situation there the largest mass incarceration of a minority population in the world today. That reported about 3 million Uyghurs to be in counter-extremism centers. And I think from the UN, we saw the breakdown of 1 million in these re-education centers, 2 million in different camps. And as I mentioned last time on the show, it's not just Islam that they're cracking down on. It's all kinds of religion that they disagree with. The Chinese government, they had a white paper that they published on April 3rd titled China's Policies and Practice on Protecting the Freedom of Religious Belief. And again, when we're all familiar with the Soviet-style newspeak, it really was about the exact opposite. It said that all religions in China must be Chinese. Leaders of religious groups must, quote, practice core socialist values. So if your religion doesn't promote socialism, you're not welcome in China. So core socialist values carry forward the fine traditions of the Chinese nature and actively explore religious thought which conforms to the reality in China. So really, yes, China loves free religion. As long as your religion conforms to what they want it to, then yes, you're absolutely free to practice your religion in China. But if they disagree with part of it, well, no, not religious freedom there. It says that the Chinese government guides, quote, religious believers to love their country and compatriots, safeguard national unity, ethnic solidarity, be subordinate to and serve the overall interests of the nation and the Chinese people. So if you're not if you don't cooperate with that, no religious freedom in China. In April, Bibles disappeared from almost all websites in China. If you go into China, you try shopping for a Bible online, you can't find any. It doesn't show up on Amazon or Taobao, a Chinese site. China has kind of said, they've said they don't know anything about this. But online sellers have been privately telling journalists that it's now illegal for them to publicly sell Bibles on these websites. A spokesman for Amnesty International told CNN there's a broader trend under President Xi Jinping to more tightly control religion, especially Christianity. It's absurd that the government claims to promote religious freedom while at the same time they're banning the sale of Bibles. So it may be Muslims that are being locked up in this camp right now, but they're clamping down on all religion in China. A former instructor at one of the re-education camps, coming back to where all these million Uyghur Muslims are, and he explained how it all works. He said that the religious prisoners, they go for jail for days, weeks, or months, and then they're taken to these re-education camps so that they kind of breaks down their resistance to the instruction. They're forced to watch hours of propaganda films and videos denouncing extremisms, and then they have to memorize and endlessly say pro-Communist Party slogans and chants and songs. The Muslim prisoners, they're forced to apologize for and criticize their past conduct as a Muslim. They're told to repeat, "We have done illegal things, but now we know better." Sometimes they're forced to eat pork or drink alcohol. And they're asked questions like, "Do you obey Chinese law or Sharia? Do you understand why religion is dangerous?" And if they aren't give the wrong answer, they lead to punishment. And again, look, I do think China does have a genuine problem with religious extremism in that province. And there is a presence of the Islamic State. And when you look at some of these attacks that we talked about in the first part of the show, you can understand in some way why China is clamping down here. But it's not just, it goes way beyond Islamic extremism that they're clamping down on. You see that with the way they're pushing against Christianity. You see that with their 1 million in concentration camps. This is just a very different response to just trying to stop Islamic extremism. In June 2017, a state-run journal, they had an article talking about how successful these re-education camps are. They surveyed 588 people who'd been in these camps, and 98.8% said they had learned from their mistake and realized what they had done. The AP News wrote that transformation through education, the researcher concluded, is a permanent cure. Now, we don't really have a lot of evidence of what goes on at these camps. They keep it very tight and close, but there are credible witnesses that have talked about malnutrition, brainwashing, cruelty, beatings, torture, death in some of these jails and camps. One survivor told The Guardian, "I still think about it every night until the sun rises. I can't sleep. The thoughts are with me all the time." It sounds like something out of World War II, something out of some kind of dystopian novel, something that just doesn't come out of the world today. You know, we're in the post-21st, not something that we think of happening in the 21st century. And this is something that is just going to spread. And is already spreading. I mean, if you look at what China's doing with surveillance technology, it's shocking, and it's spreading. Spreading throughout China, but you can certainly see that other nations are going to pick this up. They've got programs where you, as soon as you walk out of your apartment, there's a camera at the entrance that records your departure. Well, it's great. It lets you in and out because it recognizes your face and you don't need your key. But then it means that the government knows exactly when you leave your apartment, who you leave your apartment with. There's monitoring software that can follow you from one camera to the next. They're experimenting with, they've got pilot software with police wearing sunglasses, with cameras, with facial recognition software that just then display on the camera who each person is. And if there's a criminal, flags them up. They've got, because of course China with the communist system, just about all of the businesses are integrated with the government in some way. So say you arrive at work and your company has a camera, that way well be part of the government system. It flags up to the company, flags up to the government, you've arrived at work. The government's talking about keeping a citizenship score where if you visit websites the government disapproves of, or if you leave comments that aren't sufficiently supportive of the government, or if you buy just things online that the government disapproves of, your citizenship score could go down. And that means you're not allowed to travel. You're not allowed to travel definitely overseas. You get slower internet connection. A German academic, Adrian Zenz, who writes about these things in China, he wrote, "Surveillance technologies are giving the government a sense that it can finally achieve the level of control over people's lives that it aspires to." Control over people's lives. They have their Sharp Eyes initiative that aims to link up millions of security cameras into a single nationwide surveillance platform. The official documents state that they're aiming for omnipresent, fully networked, always working, fully controllable surveillance by 2020. And they're running in several cities pilot schemes for this. They've got another program, Police Cloud, that this links with it. It aims to collect citizens' online information and government data and link it to ID cards and faces. So, you know, the police system, the public system scans your face and they can see all of your shopping receipts, browsing history, medical records, criminal records, social media comments, and it's all right there for people to look at. And even the Chinese government documents, they say that they're aiming to use this to monitor criminals, but they define criminals as anybody who has extreme thoughts. So monitor thought crime. The Washington Post wrote in January that the Chinese government is working hand in glove with the country's tech industry, from established giants to plucky startups, staffed by graduates from top American universities and former employees of companies like Google and Microsoft, who seem cheerfully oblivious to concerns that they might be empowering a modern surveillance state. In December, China demonstrated this to the BBC. In Guiyang, the police, you know, they have this kind of system that links all of these CCTV cameras together. So they had a BBC reporter go into the town center and they basically said, "Look, we'll find you and arrest you using these TV cameras." And it took them just 7 minutes to track down and perform a mock arrest of this BBC reporter. And Reuters had an article on this just yesterday, on this spreading technology. It was titled, "From Laboratory in Far West, China's Surveillance State Spreads Quickly." It talked about how more and more the police, they're checking people's phones for, quote, "illegal information." And this kind of technology, it was mostly used in this Uyghur province where they were locking people up and putting up all of these people in concentration camps and they wanted to monitor what people thought. But this article talks about how it's spreading throughout China. Government documents, they write, procured or collected by Reuters and rare insights from officials. So the technology encountered in Xinjiang is encroaching in cities like Shanghai and Beijing. Police stations in almost every province have sought to buy the data extraction devices for smartphones since the beginning of 2016, coinciding with a sharp rise in spending on internal security and crackdown on dissent, the data shows. The documents provide a rare glimpse into the numbers behind China's push to arm security forces with high-tech monitoring tools as the government clamps down on dissent. Now, clamping down on dissent everywhere. And they're gaining more and more power to do so. Here's an article. This is from the latest Foreign Affairs magazine. When China rules the web, they're gaining more and more power overseas. They write, for almost five decades, the United States has guided the growth of the internet. From its origins as a small Pentagon program to its status as a global platform that connects more than half of the world's population and tens of billions of devices, the internet has long been an American project. Yet today, the United States has ceded leadership in cyberspace to China. Chinese President Xi Jinping has outlined his plans to turn China into a cyber superpower. Already, more people in China have access to the internet than in any other country, but Xi has grander plans. Through domestic regulation, technological innovation, and foreign policy, China aims to build an impregnable cyber defense system, give itself a greater voice in internet governance, foster more world-class companies, and lead the globe in advanced technology. They write that given China's size and technological sophistication, Beijing has a good chance of succeeding, thereby remaking cyberspace in its own image. If this happens, the internet will be less global and less open. A major part of it will run Chinese applications over Chinese-made hardware, and Beijing will reap the economic, diplomatic, national security, and intelligence benefits that once flowed to Washington. A good deal of the fact about the internet being free and open has stemmed from the fact that it's based in the United States with its First Amendment protections. Do you think if it's a Chinese-dominated internet where they're locking a million people in re-education camps, is that going to have the same free and open character? I know this, the internet is designed to be hard to control, hard to take down, but we've seen what China, with a lot of money and determination, can do even within China with their great firewall, shutting out what other nations can do as they get, or what their citizens can view from other nations, as they get control of the whole internet, or more and more influence over it. They're going to be finding more and more ways to crack down on what's on there. And I'm sure people that are good with technology are going to be able to find ways to get around that. But for the majority that aren't, you're going to see websites and things that they disapprove of having less and less visibility. I mean, you see that already just with, you know, China's the world's largest economy. And so countries want to be in China's good side. They want to be able to trade with China, so they're reluctant to do things China doesn't like. Big companies, and Mercedes-Benz, I think they used a quote or something from the Dalai Lama in one of their ads. And of course, China doesn't like the Dalai Lama. He's closely associated with Tibetan separatists that want to break off from China. And so Mercedes found themselves suffering big penalties for that ad. Companies, countries know you, they don't want to get on the bad side of China. But what we're seeing in China with this rise of this surveillance state, what we're seeing with this 1 million people locked in camps, you know, we're getting a glimpse of the after America world. What happens when America is no longer dominating the globe? I mean, so much of the freedom that's everywhere today comes because of the United States and Britain, but in recent years, primarily the United States, spreading it. What happens when that influence is gone? When it's China and Russia spreading their model instead? Well, we get a glimpse of that, as I said, with what's happening in China. In the 2014 Trumpet print edition, Trumpet managing editor Joel Hilliker had an article, What Happens After a Superpower Dies? He writes, What happens when a superpower dies? What happens when the geopolitical order that has stabilized the world for several decades crumbles? We're about to learn firsthand. For most of the past century, the United States of America has been the world's single greatest guarantor of global stability. He talks about I'll read it. It's good information. It says, without America, American might in World War I and II, Britain, France, and the rest of Europe would have been trampled under the boot of a German-led military takeover. After the Second World War, America stimulated the fastest period of growth in Europe's history, providing massive aid that propelled the ravaged continent towards cooperation and prosperity. America rebuilt and stabilized war-torn Asia, significantly helped Japan, South Korea, the Philippines, China, India, Taiwan, and other neighboring nations recover. Simultaneously, America checked the spread of communism in Eastern Europe throughout Asia, countering Soviet aggression and bringing down another totalitarian empire with globalist ambitions. It's called Pax Americana, the period of relative peace that has dominated that dominant American power has produced. It has prevailed in the Western Hemisphere for most of the 20th century. It reigned throughout the West since World War II in what has been referred to as the Long Peace. But now he says Pax Americana joins Pax Britannica and Pax Romana. It's history. Later in that article, he writes, look at the powers that are poised to take over in America's absence, and it quickly becomes clear. 2 centuries of Anglo-American rule are to be superseded by something very different. And that's what we see rising in China. Britain and America, they have genuinely stood for freedom. They've also been a source of great evil in this world. I mean, look who's pushing things like pornography, homosexuality, immorality. They're coming from Britain and America too. But at the same time, they have been a source for freedom, for free speech. And this time is coming to an end. And what we're seeing in China is the future. The Bible talks about it spreading further. I mean, we talked about surveillance. The Bible talks about a time when no man will be able to buy or sell without the approval of a central government. The Bible calls this stamp of approval the mark of the beast. It's a mark of religious observance, compliance with a state-approved religion. And what we see in China, you could see that easily being used to enforce such a policy. Refuse this stamp of state-approved religion. We see this cracking down of religious freedom in China. Well, then you appear on the list of people not permitted to hold a job, not able to buy goods or food at shops. History is full of religions using surveillance to enforce their religious belief. The BBC, they even had an article where they noted in the Middle Ages, the Roman Catholic Church was more powerful than most governments and had a powerful surveillance network to match. Paul Johnson talks about the Catholic Church's pursuit of thought crimes. And that's in his book, A History of Christianity. The Bible talks about that being enforced, and it, as you know from the rest of what we talk about on this show, that's coming not to just to China, but to Europe. This is the times that we're heading into, where you're seeing these kind of camps, not just in China. You know, you'll see them in more and more countries. And this is the times that the Bible talks about as the times of the Gentiles. Here's how Mr. Flurry, he's had a few Key of Davids with that same name, but we'll listen just a second to a clip from one of those Key of Davids just to introduce somewhat of what the Bible says about these times that we're heading into. Here's that clip from Mr. Flurry.
Greetings, everyone. When Jesus Christ was on this earth, he talked quite a lot about the times of the Gentiles, which is to be the greatest crisis ever on this earth. Now, it's all tied to the very second coming of Jesus Christ. And that's very good news because it's just all tied together. But who understands about the times of the Gentiles, which Christ discussed as that greatest time of suffering ever on planet Earth? Who talks about that and who understands that today? Christ did say there would be a message going out to this world in the end time, explaining about these times of the Gentiles. Daniel also prophesied that there'd be one and only one voice that would be discussing this last end and the times of the Gentiles. Daniel also talked about these wild, fierce Gentile beasts. And that's very meaningful. It's very descriptive. But what does it mean? And how does that relate to the times of the Gentiles? And let me tell you, it does closely relate to that great times of the Gentiles. And when you talk about that great image in Daniel 2, it talks about great world-ruling powers, the last one, the Roman Empire, being resurrected 10 times, but there were the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans, and every leader they had the mind of a wild, fierce beast. You want to try to negotiate with a wild beast? Well, that's what many of our leaders are trying to do. Listen, God is telling you what it's like, these men are like, when they get that power, these Gentile men, and they become cunning, ferocious beasts in their mind. They think like wild beasts wanting to conquer, and war against others, pillage and burn and destroy. That's what they do, just routinely. And it's been that way throughout history. And somehow we think, well, we've come past that now, but the worst time of the Gentiles is yet ahead of us. We've seen nothing yet. And what you're about to see in the times of the Gentiles is going to be worse than all of those other seven world powers combined, and they were all called beasts. Now, that is the truth of your Bible. And we have to see and understand this.
So this is the time we're heading into. You know, with these type of re-education camps coming around the world. I mean, does all this sound unreal? It can do. War, internment camps, it all sounds so far off. I mean, really, until seeing some of this news from China, I kind of thought about 1 million people being locked in camps. I mean, that's not something we associate with the 21st century. That's 20th century. That's World War II history. But it is happening right now. And as China rises in the world, as America falls, that's going to be happening a whole lot more. But I talked about this, just this kind of thing, not seeing real or relevant in the trumpet brief that I sent out yesterday. I was talking about Seagates and that. Just one small subject that can seem far off and distant and insignificant, and just showing how relevant that is to our lives. In that, I played a clip from George Friedman, the founder of Geopolitical Futures, from last year at a talk he gave in Hungary. I'd like to play that for you in a minute. It's a bit of a lengthy clip. It's on YouTube, so I'm sure he doesn't mind me playing it. But it really does make how this whole subject of war, even, that can sound so remote, but it really shows how it is very real to us. So we'll play that clip now.
Is a global war coming? Of course. There's never been a century that didn't have a global war. The 20th century, you know about. 19th century is the Napoleonic Wars. 18th century was the Seven Years' War. We can go back and back and back and back. But if you don't think there's a global war coming, then you're saying that the 21st century is going to be the first century in which there isn't a global war. And I will bet against you any amount you want. In fact, global war, all war is sitting with you right now. It's sitting in your pocket. I present to you the iPhone. You've seen this. It carries such superb tools on it as YouTube and Tinder and all the essentials. And you guys are so cool that you know that this represents the future and makes you completely different because, well, you're cool. Let's talk about it. The foundation of this phone is a microchip. The microchip was developed to guide U.S. intercontinental ballistic missiles against Soviet targets. It had to have a small computer in it. It had to be very light. It had to be very accurate. And the microchip was the solution. And all of the weapons that we used during the Cold War to threaten the annihilation of humanity was built on the microchip. And you now use it today. Because it's cool. But that's what it is. Take a look at the other thing. You have a camera in your phone, the digital camera. That was developed by the U.S. National Reconnaissance Office for spy satellites. Problem we had was that if you took regular pictures with film, how do you get them to Earth? So you had to have a way to take pictures of targets of various sorts that didn't require you to drop a Kodak film pack down to the Earth, because that's what they did at the beginning. And they had to develop some sort of way to take pictures that could get back to Earth fast, just the way you send selfies to your mother or something. And that was the digital camera. It was driven by something called the CCD, which I remember the name once, but I can't remember what it's about. And what it did was it took digital pictures that could be beamed back to Earth to target people. Your innocent little camera had its birth in spy satellites. There's GPS. You love it. You walk around the street looking at it instead of the traffic. You get killed. It's a cool device. GPS was invented by the United States Air Force, was called NavStar, to guide cruise missiles to their targets and to allow Army units precision in their land navigation. In other words, it was invented to let soldiers know where they were. Okay? And it's the most dangerous thing you have in your device, because if you don't get hit by a car, you're going to crash yours while you're staring at it. So it has a violent nature built in. Now, all of this is designed to get to the place where all humanity lives, which is the internet. The internet was developed by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency to move classified data from one secret lab to the other. So something in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the lab's there, would be moved to Los Alamos, and that would be moved to Brookhaven National Laboratories. And what were they doing in these laboratories? Doing research on nuclear wars, because that was the big story then. It was developed with only one thing in mind: to make research more efficient. And when you get on the internet, all the protocols you get and all the cool stuff that gets you around were developed by American scientists who were deeply involved in the Cold War. Now, you then have the cell phone, which most of you don't use anymore, because you irritate me by sending me text messages instead of picking up the phone. Okay. The cell phone was first deployed in 1985 by the United States Army and was used for the first time in Operation Desert War. And it was entirely invented to facilitate military communication. Bottom line is, there is nothing in this phone, or if you're a religious fanatic in the Android, there was nothing in this that was not created for war. So you think about war as a distant thing. You think about war as something that doesn't really have to do with you. And then you pick up this phone, and every bit of it is drenched in war, in fear of war, and everything else.
That was George Friedman talking, and said in Hungary. But it really shows how these are things that we think of war as distant. It's not. So this is a very sobering subject. War, internment camps. It is a reality that we have to think about. But there's something else really important that we have to keep in mind all the time as well. We're talking about this in the context of Bible prophecy. We talked about how the Bible prophesies of a times of the Gentiles. We played that clip from Mr. Flurry where he talks about a lot of those prophecies there in the times of the Gentiles. And, well, we have our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, that shows how the rise of America and Britain and then the fall of America and Britain, it's all unfolding according to Bible prophecy. And that's what we have to keep firmly in mind. And this is all happening according to a plan from an all-perfect God. And he's so powerful that he made all of these detailed prophecies thousands of years ago that we're seeing playing out right now in the news. I talked about that in the trumpet brief, just about all these very specific prophecies about sea gates, going all the way back to Abraham. And you see them being fulfilled exactly. So we see a God that is absolutely, you know, a God that powerful, a God that can 4,000 years ago prophesy news events that we see right now. A God that powerful is absolutely in control of everything that we see in the news. And he is allowing it to unfold according to a definite plan. In that same trumpet edition as Mr. Hilliker's article on what happens when a superpower dies, we had another article, A Message of Hope. A great little article just about why we warn. And we make these bad events real to you. We tell you that they're coming. But we do that because there's action you can take to make sure you avoid that time of trouble. But also we do that because there's a message of great hope that we need to get out that's closely related to them as well. We can see the Bible proven true today in our world news. And then we can build absolute, unshakable confidence in the Bible prophecies. And so many of those are just wonderful, positive prophecies about a time coming shortly afterwards of wonderful peace and prosperity, of man finally solving all of these problems, or God solving for man all of these problems on the national level, the international level, problems between nations, all the way down towards problems in families. I mean, I saw another story last week about how record numbers of teenage girls in the UK are cutting themselves. Just a horribly depressing subject. But you know, we all want solutions to those problems. We all want that to stop. And the Bible tells us that it will stop, that God has God is going to solve those problems. That a time where that is going to be over forever. The Bible tells us that God has a plan for man so glorious that it completely eclipses all of the sufferings that we have coming, that we see coming in the news. Bible prophecy that we see around us being fulfilled, it builds our confidence in that wonderful hope. And it's the only real hope that there is out there. There's no hope in the world for solving these problems. And that is a vision that we can lock onto despite what we see, or even because of the bad things that we see in the news today. So keep tuning into this show. We'll give you the news and we'll give you that wonderful hope as well. You can read more about, we have a whole load of material on our website where you can read more about all of that hope. One place is the United States and Britain in Prophecy that just gives you a great overview of God's plan that we see playing out in the news in front of us every day. So you can get that book from thetrumpet.com. You can keep listening to the shows on thetrumpet.com. If you're one of the 76 million that likes podcasts, you can subscribe to our podcast there as well. So keep tuning in. You can send us feedback at td@kpcg.fn. Keep tuning into the show. I have Mr. Stephen. Well, actually, I'm not sure who's back tomorrow. And then Mr. Brad McDonald on Friday with that very interesting program on Scandinavia. So thanks for listening and keep tuning in, podcasting, subscribing, reading, and writing in your feedback.